If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Would you get a drone to deliver your coffee?
Will drone deliveries cause traffic jams in airspace?
Why is the drone industry taking off in Ireland?
This is For Tech's Sake, a co-production for Silicon Republic and the Headstuff Podcast Network. We're your hosts, Jenny Darmody.
And Elaine Burke. And Jenny, I want to ask you my question. Would you get a drone to deliver your coffee?
Oh, such a question. I mean, to be honest, this is a little embarrassing, but I feel like a year ago I would have been like, Jesus, no, what an absolute waste of time. But as is the zeitgeist of the world where things just become more frequent and common and you just fall into the commonality of, oh, this is what we do now. I can't honestly say, hand on heart, I'd never get. Certainly, I could see the benefit of having my lunch delivered.
Yeah, on those busy days when you want something good, you've nothing good in the cupboard.
Yeah.
And you don't, it's minging out and you don't want to go outside.
Yeah, like a single coffee, no, probably not. It is certainly not the back arse of trim. But a lunch, definitely, maybe I would consider.
Well, so it's funny because, right, at the start of this year in Balbriggan, Manna, an Irish company, were doing up to 250 deliveries a day by drone. And coffee was the most popular item. That surprised me. Because, like, you can get other stuff. You can get, like, you can get takeaway food. You can get some groceries. You can get paracetamol, I believe. Like, you can definitely get stuff from, like, pharmacies and some of their trials. You can get a bottle of Coke. Other fizzy beverages are available, but I know they have partnered with Coca-Cola. Mm. Like, and that's for delivery within 3 minutes, they say. That's their promised timeline. And I'm thinking, like, you know, if the local deli could throw in a breakfast roll, I could really see a major market for this on a hungover Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Get your paracetamol, your Coke and a breakfast roll, all delivered by drone. Probably three different drones if they're three different.
Possibly. Or there's going to be some sort of system that they've worked out a deal that are like three things in a row. Because, you know, like there's often a pharmacy beside a deli.
Doing a deal.
Yeah. And the deal's already there. I mean, a breakfast roll, a bottle of Coke and a bag of crisps is already a lunchtime deal. And also, actually, those delis are often those little supermarkets that have paracetamol behind the counter, so you know
you could get your all in one.
Just a thought. I mean, and even just from a sickness point of view, I mean, we know from COVID of not being able to leave the house and stuff, but just like common sicknesses of like, I'm so unwell, I don't think I can leave the bed, but I also need some drugs.
Yeah. People also trying to be a bit more responsible about that since COVID, where, you know, you probably won't go to your office with your flu systems and symptoms and spread them around like a jerk.
And not wanting to go to the pharmacy and like infect all those people and be like,
possibly vulnerable people as well.
Can I have some Nurofen, please?
And if you still lived in Blanchardstown, you could probably avail of this service because Manna also recently announced it's going to launch what they're saying is the world's largest drone delivery trial there. So they're kind of scaling up. They started in Oranmore in Galway, which would be a rural area out in County Galway. Then Balbriggan is a pretty far out suburb in Dublin, and Blanchardstown is still a suburb, but it's massive. So they're getting into more and more densely populated areas with it. And like, it is interesting. It has seen take off. with people, as I said, like coffee's being very popular, and that surprised me. And it's a funny thing because I feel like it walks a fine line between pretty cool. Mm. Like, it is a pretty cool concept to get a little delivery by drone in 3 minutes. Like, that is pretty cool. But then also, like, kind of stupid. I do think there's a fine line between stupid and cool. Like, what are you doing that for, you sap?
There's definitely a novelty element to it, which is definitely there. And also, shout out to Silicon Republic AV manager Connor, who has definitely used this service out in Balbriggan. But like, you know, there is a novelty benefit, and maybe the coffee thing is interesting because that is the take up of it. Mana raised $25 million last year. It already employs more than 100 people. It's announced its first pilot scheme in the US. And next year it plans to reach 1.5 million people with 15 new locations across Ireland alone. So like, that's an incredible expansion of a business.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's not just Mana. So Ireland's actually becoming a real big hub for drone development. Like, we have this future mobility campus down in Shannon called the FMCI. And they recently kicked off a 3-year EU project, which has funding of over 5 million euro, called ALU Air. And you know, when it's got a name like that, it's Irish led. But it's trying to work out the whole concept of U space, which is like airspace, but it's for uncrewed aircraft. That's what the U stands for. So uncrewed aircraft being drones, and figuring out how that can integrate with traditional air traffic management. Like, that's all pretty complicated and needs to be worked out. And one of the project goals is to demonstrate and validate 5 use cases of urban mobility. Now, that's pretty broad and generalised and unspecific, but it's early days on this project. It really just kicked off recently. But definitely some research to keep an eye on. I'm sure you will be at Silicon Republic. And they have a drone port there to test drone projects as well.
Oh, it's so fancy. It's getting really advanced. But also, what's interesting about like Ireland as a player is that it's not just Irish companies or Irish cohorts and things like that. Because one huge international player that's using Ireland as their drone testbed is Wing. Wing is backed by Google parent company Alphabet, and it launched a drone delivery pilot in Lusk in County Dublin last year. And just this summer, it announced a partnership with a UK healthcare logistics company to work with hospitals and pharmacies. So there we go with the medication again, in South Dublin for rapid delivery of medical supplies.
In South Dublin, I need to be availing of this when I need paracetamol on my hungover Sunday. But we have Irish startups riding the coattails of the drone industry by tying their technologies into it as well. It's kind of like how, you know, a lot of companies are tying in AI now to get investment. But there's some companies that can benefit from this drone development. So Pruvi is an agritech company, and what they develop is image analysis technology that's specifically for the analysis of crops. And that can help measuring yields, detecting disease, monitoring environmental impact and stuff like that. But that kind of crop monitoring with their sensors and their image technology is best done by a drone. So they embed the drones with this image processing technology, and they're doing really well at that as well.
And this is where I think that line between like stupid and unnecessary novelty and really, really cool stuff like really blends, because like with any industry, there's an offshoot of businesses that build around and support the drone industry, for example. And agritech is like one of those many cool industries that can be revolutionized. So Avtrain is a Dublin company that has become a European leader in drone training and certifications. So that's another area, like the education side of things and the training. It basically bridges the knowledge gap for non-experts in aviation to get to grips with how airspace management works and how regulations are created and how they can kind of mind those regulations. And their clients include the likes of, yes, Mana, but also the Irish Coast Guard and Inland Fisheries Ireland. So like well-established supply chain players that are already there need this training.
And I think it was the company lead from Avtrain who said something along the lines of, if it's high up and unsafe and I don't know if she said really muddy or something like that, but basically like these high risk things, like we should be able to send drones in to do it. And it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah. And there's another company, a Canadian tech company called Zenadrone, operating in Ireland as well. And like Pruvi, it's an agritech space company using drones equipped with sensor technology for crop and livestock monitoring. So they picked Ireland for a key spot of operations because A, unsurprisingly, we have an amazing agriculture industry that they're targeting, but also because the regulation in Ireland has been so welcoming for these companies, which I just love to hear when you hear so much resistance from certain cohorts of technology not wanting to be regulated. You know, when Europe and Ireland is quite well regarded and for high regulation, that these companies are like, yes, please, that's great. We actually spoke to Zenadrone engineer Daria Batt, who told Silicon Republic that liaising with government departments and other stakeholders was relatively easy, and that EU rules around drones are so straightforward compared to markets such as the US, which has regulations, but they're very, very complex.
Yeah, and it is unusual to hear that in not just the tech space, but in an emerging tech space, that there's not a contentious relationship with regulators. It actually does seem to be quite a productive relationship. And it's funny because like these drone companies, like you said, they seem to be happy that there are clearly defined rules and that it's not a free-for-all, because that actually helps them in their development, because they have to invest in building these products and they want to make sure that their business they're investing in, because it's an emerging technology, has a future. And to have a future, it needs to be realistically aligned with aviation regulation. And then they have an assurance that their development developments won't just be scrapped down the line if regulation finally catches up with what's happening with drones. So it is like a positive thing to see. And we've seen how when you missteps with the regulation, what kind of havoc can be wreaked, because we did see that in the aviation industry earlier this year. Like, there's lots of concerns that skies become littered with drones, and there's lots of privately owned drones that people have just for their own leisure and pleasure, and they caused successive and severe disruptions at Dublin Airport this year. Flights were rerouted, hundreds of passengers were delayed. In one case, just one drone, a single drone, caused three flight diversions and suspended operations at the airport for around half an hour.
Who's that guy? Do you know what I mean?
God damn it, guy.
And like, very recently, the airport was like given the legal right and the technology to take down drones that present a risk to its operations. This required a change to the 1926 Wireless Telegraphy Act to say that it is lawful for the Dublin Airport Authority to use a radio frequency jammer to interfere with drones if they reasonably believe it to be necessary to ensure the safety of civil aviation or public safety. So, like, that's a really big change. And
to an act from the 1920s.
Yeah.
That's
which
funny.
I think has come, like it was pretty swift as far as, like, changes to the law would happen to allow for this. And I think just the severe disruption that has been happening has caused that to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And Michael O'Leary getting all head up about it. It was kind of fun. But yeah, essentially, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there is drones. A lot going on.
And we are very lucky today to have none other than the CEO and founder of Manna, Bobby Healy, to tell us a bit more about it. There's this incredible Irish drone industry emerging, and it's got native players, but it's also attracting international players as well. Why do you think the country became a bit of a hub for this activity? And do you think Manna has actually had an influence on that?
Like, we're a trailblazer for sure, but we're not, I mean, we're not the first. I mean, one of my investors, my early year seed round, is Irelandia Aviation, Declan Ryan's investment vehicle. And I had been speaking to him and his team for quite some time before I started Manna's. And I noted at the time that a lot of those conversations and thinking around drones as a technology for various different use cases was already there. And the IAA, the Irish Aviation Authority, were very much thinking about it. So I wasn't by any means the first. Manna weren't the first to be thinking that you know, we could be doing something in Ireland. I think we're definitely the first to commercialize it and to really get scale into it and bring a lot of investment. Like, we've raised $45 million so far. We've a big team, 110 people in the team. If we're successful, and there's always an if because it's a very tough space, we're building for worldwide scale, which is just the nature of what we're doing. It doesn't mean we're different than some of the smaller companies that are doing other just equally important things, but just maybe smaller at a commercial level. But there's certainly a lot of activity around it. And activity comes from two key elements. One is we have a business-friendly government, right? A government that is policy-driven to support small business and risk-takers, adventurers, you might call them. We have Enterprise Ireland that really are an asset that a lot of Irish people don't understand how powerful it is to help us internationalize the business, help us get access to markets around the world, and just create a worldwide presence for a tiny company that any other startup anywhere else in the world would lick their lips at the opportunity that Enterprise Ireland gives us. So from a government policy and support point of view, that's driving a lot of the innovation here in Ireland. And then of course, the IAA. And even though the IAA are the Irish Aviation Authority, the clue's in the name, they actually work under European regulations. You know, EASA is the European Aviation Safety Agency, and IAA would be a leader in that space. So oftentimes you do something in a small market like Ireland, you don't get much street cred for it in the bigger markets, but the IAA would be considered one of the world's top regulators. And so any license we get here, any progress we make here would be considered very favorably in other markets. So it just happens to be, as it often does with Ireland, we punch above our weight. And as we do in my past businesses with travel technology, we were a leader, as a number of Irish businesses are, Datalex, OpenJaw, you know, WebRes, you can go through a bunch. you know, if you go to the worldwide stage for travel technology, Ireland is the leader. And it's now the leader in drone delivery as well, or maybe not the leader, but second place. And our only disadvantage is the amount of capital.
And you mentioned, you know, scaling ahead and like leveling up as if it was games and like thinking of bigger locations and things. And I'm just thinking about the use cases as well. Are you thinking to other things outside of delivery? Like, is delivery the real revenue generator, or is this your level one, shall we say, before the drones go into other industries and areas?
Well, there's two ways to think about it. We consider that we're building an infrastructure layer for suburban communities. That's what we're building. So drone delivery as a service for any application that is valid for it. And so we want every use case. We want pharmacy, we want critical medicine, we want, you know, everything from coffee to blood. Maybe that's not a good graph there, but we don't, there's nothing really we think is outside of our scope. In terms of, we can improve the world by making it fast to move these things around. But when you look at use cases and size of market, because size of market, or TAM, as the investors call it, is important. And food delivery is a $300 billion industry. So it underpins volume. It underpins adoption, frequency, everything, right? So behaviorally, we deliver to 38% of our and more than once a month. And same again in Balbriggan, and we expect that to be closer to 50% of Blanchardstown. You only do that with things that people need on a daily basis. And in our case, that tends to be grocery, takeaway food, even coffee is a huge item for us. So it's important when you build technology that, particularly infrastructure, because this is atoms, not bits, right? Software is easy. You build it, you push it out, and, you know, it's zero marginal cost per unit. But with hardware, it's an infrastructure. So there's you know, boots on the ground, there's manufacturing, there's upfront CapEx, there's all sorts of stuff that has to be paid for before you make your first red cent. And so you look for high volume, high utilization type use cases, and that's why we've chosen. It's not that we think that the best use case for drones is coffee or food. It's just that it's the one that underpins the economics of the infrastructure. And once you have the infrastructure, once you build the road and so on, you can move anything across it. And we absolutely see ourselves doing medicine. We see ourselves doing postal and you know, parcel delivery services. But all of those things are smaller businesses than the first one we're going for.
Do you see military or policing use a possibility?
No. No. Policing is well served with other technologies. There's definitely some issues there around Chinese technology and surveillance and the safety of using. Because let's face it, the best drones are DJI drones, right? But and there's a trust issue there, and I think that's getting wider and wider. So while, yes, I love the idea of drones for policing, it's not an area we want to get in. I mean, for us, it's the opposite of that, right? We have no surveillance technologies. We have no customer data. We have, you know, when we fly across a community, we want the community to know that you know, there's nothing recorded. We know nothing about the people we fly over. And we don't want to compromise that with use cases that, you know, as good as they are, they would conflict with our own values. And then in military, if we had the resources, I would like nothing better than to be helping Ukraine defend itself, quite honestly, but we don't have the resources. There's other better funded companies to do that. But we would 100% make our technology available for that, but it hasn't happened yet. I don't think it'll happen either.
And like, with a background in software, I'm sure you're well familiar with the idea that things can and will fail. So what's it like now working in the hardware area where, you know, planning for failure can mean planning for a drone falling out of the sky and potentially causing damage and stuff like that? What's been the learning curve there?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I don't think you could find a more difficult business to build because we're hardware, which is already not a great idea. It's difficult to build hardware because it's an iterative process. And software, you can iterate very quickly. It's just fix, compile, debug, fix, compile, build, push. With hardware, particularly flying hardware and flying hardware that flies over people's heads, is a different process. It's very, very slow iterative process. So we would, when we do a software update, we have to put 1,000 flights on the aircraft before we are okay with that. And those 1,000 flights take weeks to do. Each flight has to be documented, audited, and flown with a pilot that observes the flight. Now, our aircraft are autonomous, so normal flights don't take that. But for testing and retesting changes to our software stack, it's a heavy tax. And that's all about safety, right? It's all about meeting the minimum safety requirements that we have to get our operational license. And just ethically, you just can't go fast in this space. You can't, you know, move quickly and break things. That's obviously not the way it's going to work for us. So it's really difficult. But the good side of that is because it's so difficult, it's not for the faint-hearted. So there's not going to be a lot of startups, you know, with smart people coming after us, because we're at this 5 years now. We're a pretty good team, well-funded, and we're only really ready now with a product that's ready to roll out. And I don't think if we did it again, we'd do it much quicker. We might do it in 4 years and not five, kind of thing. We budget for what's called 10 to the minus six catastrophic failures per operational hour. And that's aviation, right? And then we have a parachute on board that if everything goes disastrously wrong, the parachute takes over and shuts the power off to the motors and takes you down to the ground gently. And that's the aircraft is designed to fold on impact, so break really easily, like an egg almost. So when it does hit the ground, then it doesn't cause any injury or any significant injury. So that's the way you have to design in this space. It's crazy it is. So we lose a lot of aircraft. We have a bog in Offaly that we rent from Bord na Mona, and it's our test site. And we regularly and intentionally crash or deploy parachutes there as part of our impact testing. And you know, it's chaos when something goes wrong. You can't predict how it's going to go wrong, so you have to simulate things going wrong, first in a software simulator and then in real life. And real life is hard to map onto a simulator, but we spend a lot of money and a lot of time there. So, you know, it's a game of probabilities. That there's no one would be honest if they said things won't fail at some point. And so when you build this business, you build it, I would say, in a crawl, walk, run fashion, right? So crawl was during COVID lockdown when there was nobody outdoors, so there was no ground risk. And walk is kind of what we're doing now, where we're carefully moving forward. We're taking small steps, but steps that unlock next levels of difficulty without needing to go really fast and open loads of towns. And like, if you look at what we've done, each time we grow to a bigger town, we close down the town before it, so we can put all of our energy into making this one town perfect and obviously safe as well. And run only comes when you truly believe that you're a 10 to the minus 8 operation, and that you're completely safe, such that even if you did a million or 10 million flights a day, you're not taking risk on behalf of anyone else. And the nice thing as well about that is we do have audits by the, you know, people from Cologne, from EASA and from IAA that look at our operation, inspect it regularly, audit us. So the general public can, I suppose, rest assured knowing that we're not marking our own scorecards. And I think overall this industry, like really the players in this industry are us, Amazon and Google. These are companies, whereas we're a startup, those are two companies that don't take reputational risk if they can avoid it. So I think people can feel pretty good about this industry as we scale. It's not going to be one that can get away with taking risk.
And it's really interesting to hear how companies leveraged the crisis of COVID into an opportunity, like taking that as an opportunity to do extra trials. But now with the Blanchardstown trial, the plan is for it to be like an all-weather service. I'm sure that's, especially in Ireland, going to be a huge challenge to get over. How on earth are you going to deal with that?
Actually, it's not really. It's just we haven't had the time. Like, you triage when you're a startup. When you're any company, you're always triaging, right? Where do you spend your time? What do you do? We've never really get all weather's just engineering. There's no rocket science to it. And primarily, rain is easy. It's just about, you know, making sure everything is covered and coded, and then you have your IP rating and rain is easy. It affects efficiency a little bit, but not too much. Wind is difficult, not because of the controllability of the aircraft. You can fly in brutal weather with the type of design that we have. It's about energy. It's about how much energy do you need to fly into a strong headwind and get home safely with enough in the tank. And so that's about optimizing battery use and reducing the weight of the aircraft over time. And you don't focus on those things in the early days of an aircraft design. You focus on reliability, maintainability, manufacturability. And when you have all of those things in place, then you say, okay, now let's lose some weight, because for every extra pound, you know, you carry, you lose, you need extra energy, obviously, to carry it. And that's a recursive problem, because as you get bigger, you need more battery, and the battery itself is the heaviest object on the aircraft. So you cycle through a loop of a process of weight reduction. And that's what we've done now. So that's why we're ready for Blanchardstown with our 383 aircraft, which will fly in 97% of Irish weather, which means we can fly on Mars or bloody Venus if we wanted to, you know. But it's not that hard a problem. It's just engineering and kind of time.
And just in terms of, like you mentioned, when I asked about policing and you talked about how it's really important that people know that when the drones are flying over them, that they're not recording anything, or that, you know, that their privacy is protected and stuff. But they're still quite new, I think. And in terms of people seeing them out and about and stuff, what do you think it's like for, in terms of social acceptance of like drones just flying about and buzzing about and things like that? Because they do have that real distinct like fly noise as well.
A drone is a bad word. I mean, drone is a bad word. You know, it started off in Afghanistan, bad word. Then Gatwick Airport, bad word. And so we definitely have that to overcome. But what we've learned is that, well, you know, first of all, you know, our operation is, no, there's no noise issues. There's no privacy issues, no safety issues. We're a commercial operator. So we obey the rules, right? And where drones have gotten an unfair bad name is just bad actors, right? But you can go to Harvey Norman's and buy a DJI drone for 700 quid that will fly 8 kilometers in a straight line, and no way to find out who's flying it. And people can abuse that, as they do, and they've shut down Dublin Airport, and they've flown into their neighbors' back gardens and looked in the window. You know, if you can break a rule, it's been broken with drones. But commercial operators don't do that, because, you know, the IAA police that, and you'd be a fool to break those rules. You don't need to break those rules. So if you survey, as we did, a population before you go into the town, and then you survey them after. So before you go in, you'll get 70% positive rating for drone delivery, 20% neutral, 10% negative. And after you go into the town, and again, we've done it 6 months after we've operated, you get 98% positive and 2% negative. And that's good. That's a pretty high number. You're not going to get many technologies that have that level. And the reason the number changes is because we answer all the questions just by flying. People know that it's not noisy. It's not really a problem. They know we don't fly and look in their windows. They know we don't disturb anything. And they also know we create jobs. I mean, every business that we power suddenly can access 100, 150,000 customers in 3 minutes. What business wouldn't want to do that? So we ultimately, even though we're high tech and tech usually destroys jobs or displaces them, we actually boost businesses in a big way. So it takes a little while for, you know, just because I say it doesn't mean people believe it, right? But when we actually operate, people see what actually we bring, and then we get a very positive rating.
We're pausing for a moment to let you know about another show on the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Yes, we want to let you know about Phoning It In, which is an improvised comedy show taking off radio phone-ins. And you know how much we love them in Ireland. And sometimes you listen in to the oddballs who phone in and you think you couldn't make that up. But it turns out you can.
You can when you have the help of some of Ireland's best comedians and improvisers. And here's Dave to share the long, long list of familiar names who have dialed in.
Hello, my name is Dave Coffey, and I'm the host of Phoning It In, the hilarious improvised phone-in show. It's like Joe Duffy's Live Line, except we make it all up on the spot. We've got a back catalogue of over 100 episodes featuring some of the best comedy performers in the country. People like Kevin McGahern, Alison Spittle, Killian Sunderman, Shane Dan Byrne, Joanne McNally, Michael Fry, Emma Doran, Peter McGann, Hannah Mamelis, Tony Cantwell, and so many more. Join me, Dave Coffey, for Phoning It In right here on the Headstuff Podcast Network.
I do wonder if we get to the stage where we have that social acceptance of drones and we're all, you know, totally okay with those kind of last mile deliveries and your short-term needs being fulfilled very quickly by a drone. Like, there's lots of convenience there and I do appreciate that. And there's lots of advantages to people who maybe can't get out of the house for whatever reason. There's lots of good there, but I do worry about our descent into hyper-consumerist culture, that it might help that. Like, it might ramp up consumerism and unnecessary consumerism through that convenience. That's something that haunts me with every consumer-based innovation, though, I think.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's a fair fear. That's why at the top of the episode, I still was hesitant about the coffee thing, because I really, really, really just don't see myself personally ever wanting to have a coffee delivered to me when I could not, A, pay for the coffee, because I'm cheap sometimes, when I can go downstairs and make my own in a cup, you know, that I'm not creating, I'm not getting a cup, I'm not getting that sent to me. It's for the sake of a coffee. And did I really need the coffee in the first place? And if I really need one, can I make one at home? I am concerned about that. Like, why make your own when you could just buy one? You know, like, I do think that would happen a lot. But I also... I like to err on the side of positivity, and all I'm thinking about those Panadol that I really didn't want to have to leave the house for, and I do see the value of that. But also in much more heightened situations where, like, there are vulnerable people who can't leave the house and need medication or they need something, like, there is a good convenience there. And as we talked about, the other applications of the drones, the agriculture monitoring, these things can actually help with issues that come with the climate crisis, and, you know, help, like, better prepare the agriculture industry for things and stop disease and things like that for plants and everything. So there are benefits. And I think, as with all innovations, there probably is a necessary evil section of, like, let's just use it for this. But also there's really, really good positive applications as well.
Yeah. And you're better off rooting for them, because according to Bobby, it's not coming to Trim anytime soon.
I know. I tried to lobby him. It didn't work.
We did. Yeah. You can catch more of that in the bonus episode where we talked about the future roadmap for Mana. We also talked about the idea of job displacement that might come from this kind of drone activity. And we also got Bobby's sentiments on autonomous vehicles on the road as well as in the air. Some really, really interesting stuff that you can catch in the bonus episode next week.
And for anyone thinking that they can just go mad with their own drones, we have a PSA.
Don't be a nuisance.
Don't be a dick. That's what I really want to say.
You're more direct. They won't use a campaign of don't be a dick. I was trying to be campaign worthy.
They should. But, like, also it's just important because it's important for me because I'm flying soon. But also it's important for everybody because it is a nuisance when, like, one single drone, as we said, like, was it grounding three planes?
Yeah.
But also, for your information, drone users, according to the Irish Aviation Authority, any person flying a drone that weighs more than 250 grams, that's not a lot, or it has a camera or a sensor, needs to register as a drone operator. And most people who are operating drones, as you said, for their leisure and pleasure, have cameras because they're getting them cool drone shots.
Yeah.
And there's lots of other very clear-cut rules that you need to follow and make sure that you're, you know, following properly for proper drone use. And you can find them all at iaa.ie.
Yeah, we can even share a link for that in the show notes.
Be responsible with your drones.
Please, yes. Drone responsibly.
And we can also share another link in the show notes, a very important one, where you can vote for us for the Listener's Choice Award in the Irish Podcast Awards.
Yeah! We are so thrilled. We're nominated for the Best Factual Podcast category, but there's really tough competition there, including Headstuff's own Basically with Stephanie Preisner. So we want to up our chances of getting an award.
Yep. We are selfish like that.
We're so selfish.
It's an honour to just be nominated, but really we do want your votes.
Yes.
So all you have to do to vote for us is to follow the link, search for Tech's Sake. Other podcasts are available. We are really asking you very nicely to please search for our podcast specifically, and then you'll have to validate your email to cast your vote. Easy peasy. Vote early.
Vote often.
Now, I don't know about you, but I'd love a drone to bring me a coffee right now.
Yeah, I'm gasping. Thank you for listening to this episode of For Tech's Sake, and thank you to Bobby Healy for sharing his expertise with us. You can find Bobby at Real Bobby Healy on Twitter and find out more about Mana at mana.aero, A-E-R-O, that is. We'll also share some more links you might find interesting in the show notes.
For Tech's Sake is a co-production from Silicon Republic and the Headstuff Podcast Network. Thank you to Hilary Barry for production, Matt Mahon and Dali for our graphics, Claudia Grandes for her social media support, and all at the Headstuff team. Follow us at Silicon Republic and at For Tech's Sake Pod on your platform of choice, and please subscribe and share and let us know what you think.
Next week, we'll have a bonus episode featuring our complete uncut interview with Bobby. This is exclusive for Headstuff Plus community members only, so do look into signing up. Otherwise, we'll be back to you in a fortnight.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.